20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
Welcome back to another episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. You can get all your Pack-A-Day updates by following us on Twitter at Pack-A-Day Podcast. And remember, you can always subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, or Spotify. And of course, you can check us out over at CheeseheadTV.com. I'm Kyle Fellows, and I am here with Andrew Mertzig. It's a Friday. We're excited to be back. Andrew, how's it going, man?
Yeah, it's great to be back. Super excited that it's Friday. This week has been nuts. Before I forget to say it, go Bucks. And this is episode 1087, and everybody assumes you say 87, got to go with Jordy Nelson, right? Right. Robert Brooks would be a good alternative, too. But for me, only 187 that counts, and that is Willie Davis.
Willie Davis.
Father.
That was it. Yeah. Packers could have taken Willie Davis or his son, right, in this draft, but they didn't.
Grandson.
Yeah, grandson. Okay, I guess he is a little bit older. My bad. My fault. I thought you were going to go with Jay Sternberger here, you know, and just keep things really, really recent, really young, go with the emerging talent. You're not feeling like Jace is putting a lot of pressure on Robert Brooks as far as...
I would like to keep it classic.
All right. I like it. All right. So should we tell people what we're doing today?
Yeah, probably.
Okay. Let's get into the meat of the show. So Andrew and I are in the middle of a series that we do every single summer where we preview the Packers' upcoming opponents for the fall. So far, we have worked our way through the NFC North with the Vikings, the Bears, and the Lions. They each got their own show. We did a full episode on those teams. Last week, we talked about the Saints, the 49ers, and the Steelers. And today, we're really going to dig into the Bengals, the Washington football team, and the Arizona Cardinals. And I'm really excited about this show today. We're going to have some fun. We're going to talk about each team's free agent additions, their subtractions, their draft picks, and try to gain a picture of what we as fans should expect when they cross paths with each of these teams later this fall.
Yeah, and it's so funny because when we were laying out like which teams we were going to do when, we got to this portion of the schedule, and I remember being like, oof, this is going to be rough. You know, Bengals, Washington football team, Arizona Cardinals, does anybody care about this? And I guess talking the listeners into listening inside of the episode doesn't make a ton of sense because you're either listening or you're not. But I will tell you that even though these may not be super interesting on the surface, these are the teams we know the least about. And so digging into what they did, many of the moves that they made didn't necessarily resonate in my head. There were a few that the Cardinals made that, of course, everybody knew about. But, you know, we'll get into that. And so, you know, obviously when we're talking about transactions, we jump into free agency. And we're going to start with Cincinnati Bengals because they come up first on the Packers schedule. And there were a bunch of re-signings, and I'm not going to go through every single one of them because, honestly, this is pretty dull. But, you know, you have punter Kevin Huber, running back Samaje Perine, wide receiver Mike Thomas, lineman Quentin Spain, defense tackle Mike Daniels, cornerback Tony Brown. There's a couple of former Packers in there. So basically what I'm looking at here when I am breaking this down is Mike Daniels is back. And a bad team that doesn't really bring back any of their veterans, well, that's probably a good move. You know, they're clearly committed to getting younger and changing the culture. So who did they lose? They lost wide receiver A.J. Green, running back Gio Bernard, defensive lineman Geno Atkins, some huge, huge names there, right? Kicker Randy Bullock. There's a bunch of, like, odds and ends and transactions. But defensive lineman Carl Lawson, or Edge, depending on how you label him, cornerback William Jackson. Those are players who may not be household names, but had big, big impacts on this team. And, you know, like A.J. Green, Geno Atkins, those were pillars of this franchise, basically since they were drafted. And, you know, Gio Bernard was that, like, super frustrating fantasy football player that, like, no, everybody had on the roster at some point, but nobody wanted. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I said, Carl Lawson, William Jackson, they had really good seasons last year. And so those are big losses. And I just talked about like who the Bengals chose to bring back, which wasn't much. So this is an interesting roster building strategy here. So who did they bring in? Well, you get tackle Riley Reiff, and we certainly are familiar with him, having been on the Lions and then the Vikings. edge Trey Hendrickson coming over from the Saints. You have cornerback Chidobe Uwuzie, cornerback Mike Hilton, who came from the Steelers, defensive lineman Larry Ogunjobi, cornerback Eli Apple, safety Ricardo Allen, Thaddeus Moss, Randy Moss's son, the tight end who everybody was clamoring for, and then went undrafted, ends up in Cincinnati for this year. And then a couple of smaller moves along the way. Kayvon Frazier, the safety, wide receiver Trent Taylor, linebacker Joe Bakke. I'm not even sure. He used to play at Michigan State. But anyways, Reef is going to be one of the players who's going to try to keep Joe Burrow upright. That's the absolute number one most crucial thing for this franchise. But this defense quietly got a ton better. You know, you have Hendrickson coming over. And granted, I think they overpaid for the sack production. But that's going to be really helpful coming off the edge. Ogunjobi is a nice addition on that defensive line. And the atrocious secondary gets a ton of different faces. Uzi, Eli Apple, they're experienced NFL corners. Ricardo Allen provides a veteran presence at safety. So I like what they did there. I think this defense got significantly better. You'll probably talk about the offense in the draft a little bit.
Yeah, this Bengals class in the draft, they took a lot of shots, right? This is a pretty large class. They made a total of 10 selections starting in the first round with wide receiver Ja'Marr Chase from LSU, of course, and then into the second round, offensive tackle Jackson Carman from Clemson, edge Joseph Asai in the third round, edge, they doubled up on edge here, Cameron Sample from Tulane, Tyler Shelvin from LSU, Deontay Smith from East Carolina, the tackle, kicker Evan McPherson from Florida was your first specialist taken there in the fifth round. Center Trey Hill from Georgia. Chris Evans from Michigan, the running back, and defensive end Wyatt Hubert from Kansas State. So I think the Bengals gained some serious talent in this draft. Tyler Shelvin in the fourth is going to be a really nice help for their run defense. I think Chris Evans in the sixth has a really nice chance to be that kind of steal late round running back. He's an older prospect, but has been really, really special when he's been on the field for Michigan. But this entire draft is really going to come down to that decision that was made at number five overall with Ja'Marr Chase overtaking a tackle, because they took the tackle in the second round with Jackson Carman. So they acknowledge the need. But if Joe Burrow gets beat up again, I bet you're wishing that you would have gone ahead and taken that tackle ahead of the wide receiver there in the first round when the talent's a little bit stronger. So we know that the skill position guys are always like shiny objects. And guys like Chase, they're hard to pass up, right, for those big uglies instead. So giving Burrow an arsenal of weapons and Higgins, Boyd, and Chase, it's really, really fun. But we're going to have to kind of wait and see how this plays out in just a couple of years for those Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah, and, you know, first, the draft class, you know, obviously Ja'Marr Chase looks like a really intriguing prospect. Jackson Carman was not my favorite tackle prospect, but certainly the Bengals like what they have there. I thought Osai was a bit of a steal there. There were a lot of people that liked Cameron Sample, didn't really see it myself. I like Shelvin, just like you mentioned, that you know, huge mammoth in the middle that's going to prevent those teams from running up the gut. Chris Evans, just like you, really liked him a lot. I thought they got some nice flyers in the late rounds. Center Trey Hill, edge Wyatt Hubert. Like, those are some fun, intriguing late round guys. But just wanted to ask you a little bit from a roster building standpoint. You know, so you take a wide receiver at five overall, which I don't love, period. And then you take your tackle in the second round. Now, let's say the Bengals have decided to do the inverse. You have Penei Sewell sitting there. When you're on the clock, you take him at number five. And then in the second round, you could have gotten somebody like Rondale Moore, Dwayne Eskridge, Tutu Atwell, Terrence Marshall. Those are players that all went after Jackson Carman. And I just felt like, you know, the drop-off from somebody like Chase to, let's say, his teammate, and then you still get that LSU familiarity with Terrace Marshall, to the difference between Jackson Carman and Penei Sewell is huge. And offensive line is your number one need. So, I mean, what did you think about them going wide receiver first?
I don't want to just bash the organization, but I really thought that the Bengals had a chance to kind of redirect the ship and the direction of this entire franchise, because they had the opportunity to take Joe Burrow last year, and they obviously they took that pick. And then it feels like the Bengals just have a way of being stubborn sometimes, I feel like, in some ways within their roster building. And it feels like this year they kind of reverted back to that, like I said, taking the shiny object when the better pick is in front of them. And I know that I think we agree, that you and I, that building through the trenches is really, really important. And obviously last year we saw Joe Burrow get hurt, and it just feels like, man, they may have missed an opportunity here. I'm with you. I understand, like, Rondale Moore is not the same kind of player as Ja'Marr Chase. He's just a totally different – they might as well play different positions on the field. But Terrace Marshall is not – you could use those guys in similar ways. And when you already have Higgins and Boyd on the roster, I don't think you would have been abandoning your quarterback to a position group that was lacking talent by doing that. I really do think you'd give yourself a better chance by putting someone like Penei Sewell on this roster. But that's my personal opinion. We'll see it play out. But that's probably where I'd sit. I'm curious your thoughts on what you would have done with this.
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand not taking the franchise tackle. The position is worth so much more. You get more longevity with offensive linemen than you do wide receivers, right? Mm-hmm. If both turn out to be all pro players, Penei Sewell is going to be playing a lot longer than Ja'Marr Chase.
Yeah.
I think you're going to get more bang for your buck in you know, the offensive linemen. And just as prospects, the floor is a lot higher for Penei Sewell, because worst case, you slide him inside and he's an excellent guard. I don't understand the philosophy. It seemed to me like Joe Burrow dictated this pick. And if that is the case, that's a very dangerous precedent to set. And like, I don't want to make this all about Aaron Rodgers all the time, but the whole idea that the Packers don't give him weapons is such a joke, because the Packers may have had the best offensive line in the league last year. And if you're telling me that the offensive line isn't a weapon mm-hmm. for the quarterback, then we're talking about a different sport to me. Like, yeah. The offensive line being great makes Allen Lazard better. It makes Robert Tonyan better. It makes every single person on that field better, including Aaron Rodgers. And I think if you're the Bengals, you have to do absolutely everything that it takes to protect Joe Burrow, one, but two, to provide him with the opportunity to feel comfortable and be his best self. And I don't think they did. I don't know. I mean, I think their offensive line improved a little bit, maybe a lot of bit, but yeah. A lot from really bad isn't going to help.
Yeah, and so, I mean, you're absolutely right. Time in the pocket is a weapon. And we make fun of Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers scrambling around for his life, making unbelievable plays over the years. But that's a testament to that. Like, the more time that Aaron Rodgers could create, whether it was his line doing it for him or his legs, his awareness, that time is money, is valuable in the NFL. And so I'm with you. I think that that's probably one of the best things that they could have done, is finding that for Joe Burrow. I think offensive tackle Jonah Williams probably factors into this. They took him in the 2019 draft. He's kind of played all over that line, and he spent some time hurt. So I'm sure they kind of feel like, well, we did that. Maybe we move him around. But, man, you really – Joe Burrow's got to be healthy, and he's got to be the franchise going forward. I don't want to be a naysayer and negative, but if I'm predicting, I would guess – that this is Zach Taylor's last year as the head coach in Cincinnati, and that they're hiring Joe Brady to try to make this whole thing go again next year. So we'll see. I'm not a big fan of what Cincy's up to, but it's fun to watch nonetheless.
So we'll go from a team that we didn't like what they did too much to a team that I have a feeling we will, at least I do. And that is the Washington football team, who at least for this season is sticking with the football team. Hopefully past 2021, but that's just me. Anyways, what they did in free agency, they re-signed, or more accurately, they franchise tagged guard Brandon Scherff. They re-signed quarterback Kyle Allen, kicker Dustin Hopkins, running back Lamar Miller, and a bunch of other guys that you don't want to hear about. So, you know, Brandon Scherff is the big deal, of course, but they are paying a guard big-time tackle money on this franchise tag. And yes, he is one of the best in the league, but that's still a very steep price to pay for a guard. Kicker Dustin Hopkins might be the next best re-signing, so that says a lot about who was a free agent for Washington and who they decided to bring back. But let's take a look at who they lost. And so you have edge Ryan Kerrigan, who went over to the rival Eagles, linebacker Kevin Pierre-Louis, cornerback Ronald Darby, linebacker or edge player Ryan Anderson, corner Fabian Moreau, and linebacker Reuben Foster, linebacker Michael Kendricks. So there's certainly some big names there, but what did the footballers really lose? Well, yeah, you lose a franchise staple in Ryan Kerrigan, but they certainly didn't need him with the ridiculous depth at pass rusher that they have on the team. Darby and Moreau are losses at corner, but I think they're kind of replaceable players at this point, and there's a plan in place to replace Reuben Foster and Michael Kendricks, which we will get to in the draft. That's on you. but I did want to talk about who they acquired in free agency as well. Obviously, quarterback Ryan Fitzpatrick is going to be the big name. But then you have cornerback William Jackson, who came over from the Bengals, who I mentioned. He was a stud last year and really could go a long way in replacing the two corners that I mentioned and actually be a big upgrade there. They also got wide receiver Curtis Samuel from the Panthers, and that's a really interesting move. There's not a lot of other splashy names that they picked up in free agency. You know, I would say tackle Charles Leno, who they got from the Bears after he was cut, is interesting just because he's an experienced starting tackle in the NFL, and that's always valuable. I think, you know, the whole Curtis Samuel, and they signed wide receiver Adam Humphries as well. Adding that to Terry McLaurin and another wide receiver in the draft that Kyle will talk about is going to make for a pretty fun wide receiver room.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, this is just going to be a fun football team in general, I think, to watch this year with Ryan Fitzpatrick and just kind of a, they're building for the future, but I don't think there's a lot of pressure around this organization. I think they're going to be able to play pretty loose, have some fun, and a lot of offensive weapons have been sprinkled in here. So let's talk about that draft class a little bit. Washington left the draft with 10 players as well, so some big draft classes on the show today. Number one here in the first round, they took a Jamin Davis, the linebacker out of Kentucky at number 19 overall. In the second round, they got tackle Samuel Cosmi from Texas, Benjamin St. Just, the corner from Minnesota in the third, Diami Brown from North Carolina, again in the third at 82 overall, John Bates, the tight end from Boise State in the fourth. The fifth round, Derek Frost, the Cincinnati safety, Cameron Cheeseman, a long snapper from Michigan that was on a lot of Packers fans' wish list, I guess, there in the sixth. And then we've got a slew of guys here in the seventh because you need all the seventh round picks you can get. William Bradley King, the edge, Shaka Tony, the edge from Penn State, and Dax Milne, the wide receiver from BYU. Quite a list of talent that they brought in here in the draft. This entire class feels very, very boom or bust to me, Andrew. And Jamin Davis felt like a reach to me at 19. I guess if he's the next, you know, athletic, explosive linebacker, nobody's going to care where you took him. But felt a little rich there in the first. Samuel Cosmi was great value to me in the middle of the second round. And he gives me Colton Miller or Jason Sprigg vibes. Kind of that super athletic dude. If he puts it all together, he's a Pro Bowler. But he could just as easily be overmatched in the NFL when his athleticism isn't enough to put him over the top against these less athletic guys that he's faced throughout, I guess, the Big 12 there. So Ben St. Just is the definition of a boomer bust player. I think he was someone I thought maybe would have Brian Gutekunst's attention, but he goes here to Washington. Diami Brown was a draft crush for much of Packers Twitter. I know Andrew and I might have been the lowest on Brown among just about anyone in the draft community, but at 82, he is certainly a great value there as well. And as Andrew mentioned, it will be really interesting to see how Brown mixes in with Scary Terry, Curtis Samuel, lots of big swings in this class. And I really think 3 years from now, this will either be a home run or kind of a strikeout kind of a draft for this Washington football team.
Yeah, it's, I think you summed that up really well with the boomer buzz. Jamin Davis was not a starter at this point last year, right? Yeah, like he wasn't number one on the Kentucky depth chart. And that's
he
Kentucky.
Talked about that too in some interviews, and just kind of like how he had to prove that he could be that guy. And like, obviously he had a fantastic season and, you know, vaulted up draft boards, but he discussed that, like, hey, I haven't been the guy for very long. And that's, you know,
and if you want a situation for him to succeed, playing behind the front four that, well, really like the front six that Washington rotates in and out, that is a recipe for success. But it will be really interesting to see how he does there. You know, you mentioned Dyami Brown. The reason why I didn't like him very much, and you and I had a lot of conversations both on and off the podcast about it, was he just seemed like a guy who was running nines all day. Yeah. Like, all of his production was on deep balls. And sometimes it was just like Sam Howell, the quarterback in North Carolina, would just chuck it up there. And the corners were like, nobody's throwing into this coverage. And then he would just catch it. And I can't think of a better NFL quarterback to transition from that kind of chuck it up than Ryan Fitzpatrick. That's going to be really fun. So yeah, that'll be interesting. I do really like Derek Forrest, the safety they got in the fifth round. I thought their seventh round was really nice. You know, you get two edges, William Bradley King and Shaka Toney, both who have some upside there.
Yeah.
And you know, they're going to be very rotational players if they make the team at all for this team. So a chance to make an impact and learn there. Dax Milne, I think it's Milne or maybe Milne. Yeah. I don't remember, out of BYU. He's a fun gadgety kind of wide receiver. So we'll see how that turns out. But yeah, definitely a really interesting set of additions to this team, which was, I thought, a little underrated last year. Yeah, they went 7-9. I get it. Like, you're a division winner at 7-9. Nobody's going to really take you seriously. But people forget, that's where the Seahawks were right before they blew up. That was the playoff year. They made it at 7-9, and then there was the Beast Quake run where the Seahawks upset the Saints. And the next year is when Seattle really took off. And this Washington defense could be that good. Like, they I don't want to tip off anybody that I play fantasy football with, but like, if you don't take Washington's defense number one, you're doing it wrong.
I don't know. Is that a hot take? I haven't looked at a lot of.
It's probably a hot take. I don't really.
That's probably a hot take. I haven't seen that, but I don't think you're wrong. I think they have all the pieces. It'll be interesting. The only thing is, if Ryan Fitzpatrick's chucking it up too much, we may have a little bit of offensive firepower going on. But really, like, it is going to be interesting because Dyami Brown, we talked about the nine routes, and that's kind of his nature, it seems. I know there was a lot of talk about the other wide receiver who is now escaping me, Curtis Samuel, was going to be maybe more of an outside fixture for this team, but it would seem that Dyami may have a little bit more of a fit there, and he may kind of be relegated to at least some kind of combo, maybe back in the slot kind of a thing. So I just think this whole offense is going to be really interesting to watch and to see what they decide is the long-term direction, because it feels like the whole team is there except for a quarterback of the future. So lots to watch here in Washington, lots of fun. And maybe Fitz just sticks and he's the guy there for a couple of years. You never know. We want to get into the Arizona Cardinals, Andrew?
Let's do it.
Okay. Arizona Cardinals doing some things this offseason in free agency. We've got re-signings with linebacker Tanner Vallejo, Marcus Golden, the outside backer. We got punter. We like to get all these special teams guys in here. Andy Lee is back with the team. Kelvin, tackle Kelvin Beachum. I thought that said right tackle Kelvin Benjamin for a second, and I thought we had made a progression from wide receiver to tight end to tackle, but that has not happened. This is right tackle Kelvin Beachum. We've got offensive lineman Max Garcia, tight end Daryl Daniels, safety Chris Banjo is out here as well, still hanging around, former Packer for you. They signed some guys too, Andrew. They've got defensive linemen. You've heard of this guy before. J.J. Watt is in the building there, breaking the hearts of Packers fans everywhere. Wide receiver A.J. Green, cornerback Malcolm Butler, kicker Matt Prater, guard Brian Winters, Sean Williams, the safety, and quarterback Colt McCoy all joining the Cardinals. They had some losses as well, players getting out the door. Hassan Reddick went to the Panthers, the linebacker. Cornerback Patrick Peterson coming to the NFC North to play for the Vikings. Defensive lineman Angelo Blackson is with the Bears now. Running back Kenyon Drake leaves for the Raiders. Wide receiver Trent Sherfield is with the 49ers. And tight end Dan Arnold, who's kind of a folk legend there in Arizona, is now with the Carolina Panthers. So to me, this is kind of the ultimate boring offseason for the Cardinals. Really, really vanilla to me. I know that J.J. Watt was brought in, and that's a big deal on and off the field. I think that's absolutely true. But aside from that, I'm kind of falling asleep looking at the rest of these names. The guys who left were mediocre role players, especially at this point in their career. Not that they have always been that. But the guys they brought in are probably that same kind of player that filled that role. Patrick Peterson is on his way out, I think, in the league. And I think they'll get similar production from Malcolm Butler. They brought in A.J. Green. But as much as I love watching A.J. Green over his career, I do think he's cooked. I think he's done. And so I think outside of Watt, the Cardinals kind of shuffled the deck and came out with the same hand of cards that they had before. So I really do think it's up to their draft class here to be the thing that pulls them forward in this coming season.
Yeah, you know, and you and I talk about balance sheets a lot when it comes to these moves. And yes, when he's healthy, J.J. Watt certainly is a much better player than Hassan Reddick. But is J.J. Watt going to give you the same level of production that Hassan Reddick did last year?
Yeah.
That's highly questionable. Is Malcolm Butler going to be an improvement on Patrick Peterson? I think at this point in their career, they're kind of similar, both of them a little bit long in the tooth and, you know, not particularly productive. You bring in A.J. Green, but then potentially you're losing Larry Fitzgerald. We don't know if Larry Fitzgerald is actually retired or not. This is a mystery to everyone. But even so, like, what does A.J. Green bring that Fitzgerald didn't? Plus, they have a million wide receivers. And, like, outside of those things, which sort of like equal out, they got Matt Prater, who's a good kicker.
Yeah, so that's their tiebreaker. I mean, yeah.
Oof, I don't know. And I do like Dan Arnold, the tight end. I thought he was going to be a breakout candidate for this year. But anyways, you mentioned the draft. And so the Cardinals at pick 16 took Zaven Collins, the linebacker out of Tulsa. In the second round, they got Rondale Moore, the wide receiver slash offensive weapon from Purdue. Then they didn't pick again until the fourth round, and they got Marco Wilson, the corner from Florida. In the sixth, they had two picks, an edge from Duke, Victor Dumukeje, I think that's how you pronounce it, and corner Tay Gowan from UCF, that's Central Florida. And in the seventh round, they had two picks, James Wiggins, the safety from Cincinnati, and Michael Manet, the center from Penn State, which, you know, to me, you know, they only had two picks in the top 135. And so, you know, what you look at is, well, Zaven Collins is a fun athlete, but this is a team who should stop drafting fun athletes at linebacker, because it took them 4 years to figure out how to use Hassan Reddick, and then they just let him leave. And they just drafted Isaiah Simmons, who they clearly didn't know how to use last year. So you add in the mysterious traffic arrest that, like, nobody's saying anything about. Super weird. Like, I don't know if there's more to this investigation or if the Cardinals are just keeping their cards close to their vest. But it makes me wonder a little bit about Zaven Collins. And then Rondale Moore, super fun athlete, but that wide receiver room just absolutely jam-packed. And, like, are they going to cut Andy Isabella to keep Rondale Moore? And how much of an improvement is that really? Like, probably, if he's healthy, a lot, but we don't know. And Marco Wilson was a really intriguing athlete that I thought would go in, like, the sixth or seventh round just based off of his measurements, but they took him in the fourth round. Seems a bit rich to me. You know, I actually did like Tay Gowan, the corner. James Wiggins, the safety from Cincy, I was really high on. Manet, the center from Penn State, he seems fun, like maybe a potential upside kind of guy. This draft class doesn't really move the needle for me much.
Yeah, I think Wiggins in the seventh is someone that, like, I was pretty excited about, kind of in that fourth, fifth round probably. So I think that they got some value there. But the biggest disappointment here for me, again, we talk about Jamin Davis, you know, kind of reaching for these linebackers, trying to get that next guy that's going to impact your defense. Fine. Like, they did it. We talked about it. we don't need to exhaust the idea that maybe they should stop taking linebackers. But the biggest disappointment here for me, not for the Cardinals, is Rondale Moore. Not because he's not a Packer, but because I would have loved to see him in a Sean McVay offense or a Matt LaFleur offense, or maybe with the Jets with Mike LaFleur or something, where I felt like he was going to be used a little bit more to fit his skill set. I'm a little bit concerned about the way that they may use him here in Arizona. I'm sure he's going to get some work out of the backfield. I'm sure he's going to get used, you know, on some stuff that takes him deeper. I'm worried about maximizing that intermediate area of the field that I just feel like he'd be so much better in a different offense. But he's a talented player. They loved him. They took him. And that's like, you know, he'll thrive out there, I'm sure, but wish he was in a little bit different setting.
When they line Rondale Moore up in the backfield, Kyler Murray and Rondale Moore, smallest backfield in NFL history, right?
Oh my gosh, yeah.
They're probably sure. The same size.
the defensive linemen are going to be electric. Is there anybody back there? They're going to be like peering over the offensive line. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah, and so if you get a really good year out of Chandler Jones and J.J. Watt up front, certainly with the athletic linebackers and Isaiah Simmons and now Zaven Collins, that holds up pretty well. You have Byron Murphy at corner. You have Buda Baker at safety. This defense has the potential to be pretty good. Will this offense be consistent? And like, as somebody who was a Kyler Murray owner in fantasy football last year, he really fell off a cliff in the second half of the season. And a lot of that was due to injury. And, you know, that's something when you have diminutive size and you're going to have the ball in your hands as much as Kyler Murray does, even though he takes good care of himself, you're going to get banged up a little bit. And so that, you know, so much of the offense hinges on Kyler Murray, and they need to find a way to take some of that pressure off and stop getting him hit so much. So anyways, this is going to be matchups for the Packers in week 5, 7, and 8. Week 5, as I mentioned, at Cincinnati. That's going to be a Sunday afternoon game on October 10th. Week 7 is going to be another Sunday afternoon matchup, this time on October 24th, with the Washington football team coming to Lambeau Field. And in week 8, a Thursday night game, October 28th at Arizona. That one will be fun. So, you know, you had those two in a span of 4 or 5 days, right? Yeah. The Washington football team at Lambeau, then traveling to the West Coast at Arizona. But I would say all three of these games, winnable.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So great analysis.
We will win the games.
Yeah. You know, and we've talked about this. You know, just being honest, right? We all hope Aaron Rodgers is back. If Aaron Rodgers is back, these are three games you expect to win. I think the Washington game will be difficult. At Arizona is probably the most difficult, yeah, just because of the road factor. So they're not gimme games, but they're ones that you expect to win when you're a favorite in the NFC. If Jordan Love is a quarterback, I think the Washington and the at Arizona game become a little bit more of an even playing field. Yeah. And so certainly we'll be watching for that, and we'll be scouring the Twitter feed to find out in the next couple of weeks what is going on with Aaron Rodgers. But that is all the time that we have for today. This has been the Pack of the Day Podcast. You can find Kyle on Twitter at Packer_pundit, and you can find me at Andrew Mertig. Please subscribe and consider giving us a 5-star rating if you're a regular listener or if you're just discovering us. But you can catch Kyle and myself every single Friday. Next week, we'll be back to continue our conversation on the Packers' 2021 opponents. Thanks for listening. And as always, remember... Whoa!